Good morning. Welcome to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Show that connects you with the topics and issues and people that are important to you. Very important person here today. Mayor John Southers is here. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning, Renee. How are you?
I'm great. How was your holiday weekend?
It was wonderful. It was very, very busy. When you're the mayor, you have to go to a lot of events. Capped it off with a good Irish victory over Louisville last night, you know?
Did you?
Yeah, exactly. So it was a good weekend.
And I'm assuming, we had Doug Price in this morning from Visit Colorado Springs, and he said Labor Day liftoff was spectacular. Largest crowd he has ever seen. I think he said especially Saturday morning. I'm assuming you made a visit.
I did the media day on Friday, went up in a balloon, which is really a real treat.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it is.
And then I went to the glow on Saturday night. Now, because of wind, they didn't actually blow up the balloons, but they just have what they call candlestick. They do the flames. Big crowds, big crowd on Saturday night, but I'm told Saturday morning was unbelievable.
Wow.
And good crowds Sunday and yesterday morning. The balloons got up every morning.
Yeah, which is great.
I'm sure that they set overall record attendance. There's no question about it. It's become a huge event.
All over the state come, and even I'm sure other states.
Yeah, I had people on Saturday night raise their hand if they were from Colorado Springs, raise their hand from out of Colorado Springs. And it was about 50-50.
Wow.
I was really surprised. And there's, tens of thousands of people out there, and it's about 50-50. And, they have a band every night.
Which is really cool.
They're playing songs that 80-year-olds are dancing to and 3-year-olds
right.
are dancing to.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Well, I'm glad you had a chance to get out there. Having to work, I'm not saying, but working it for several years, it was like I had my chance with the balloons, like you going up and stuff. It is really a treat to do that.
Yeah, my comment to the city planning department is the city looks a lot better organized from the air than it does when you're standing on the ground.
Exactly.
It's all chaos. But when you get up there, you see the layout of all the roads and
yeah.
the blocks and everything like that. And it's a really interesting perspective. And, of course, in Colorado Springs, when you get to look over the skyline back to the mountains, it's just spectacular.
Well, and how lucky are we that Scott Appleman and them came in and took over the event? I mean, they handle the Albuquerque one, too, don't they?
Well, they're part of it. They don't run it. This is the only one that Scott runs in Hot Apple Productions. But he's very good, and he's had it for 5 years.
Yeah.
And I think it's what I like about it, they've now gotten all these complimentary activities. You got the skydivers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Monday morning they had the World War II airplanes.
Yes,
that was
getting ready for the big air show.
Yeah, that was a huge hit. So Scott's done an outstanding job with it, no question about it.
Well, you know what, Mayor? I want to go ahead and take a break because when we come back, I want to. We have so much, the list is long, so much to talk to, including the governor's comments into the investigation on the Devon Bailey shooting, the traffic safety, another bad, tragic weekend. Also, we're going to talk about that a lot more. So, we're going to have more with Mayor John Southers coming up next on The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Good morning. Welcome back to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Today we're talking with Colorado Springs Mayor John Southers. And Mayor, let's jump right on in. And I believe it was last week, of course, the investigation into the Devon Bailey shooting with Colorado Springs police officers was a couple weeks ago. And I believe it was last week Governor Polis released a statement saying that basically it sounded like in his comments and his statement that Dan May needs to step away from the investigation and hand it and there needs to be an outside investigation. And it was kind of an interesting comment coming from the governor's office.
Yeah, it was a very interesting comment. Renee, let me start out by saying that regardless of the circumstances, the loss of life of a young life
Absolutely.
Is very sad.
It is.
And we have to empathize with the family. I also, of course, because of my background, I empathize with police officers being in this very, very difficult situation. But ultimately, the rule of law has to prevail. And let me explain what the rule of law is in this situation. Several years ago, the legislature, after much debate, passed a statute that says that in the case of a police shooting, the agency that in which the officers that did the shooting were in cannot solely do the investigation, that another agency has to be involved. Okay. The 4th Judicial District, which is El Paso and Teller counties, has entered into a protocol that is not only adheres to that statute, but goes beyond it. In other words, when an agency, the agency in which the officers involved in the shooting are in, they completely back away from the investigation, and another agency
it comes
does
in.
It. And like the similar to the situation in all counties where there's a major metropolitan police department, when the shooting is in that department, the sheriff's office does the investigation. If it's in the sheriff's office, the major metropolitan police department does it because right. They're the ones with the investigative resources. And that's going to be true in Jefferson County. That's going to be true in every place but Denver, because the Denver sheriff doesn't have any investigative resources. Uh-huh. So Aurora investigates Denver. And,
oh, okay.
Okay. So anyway, that's what the statute says. And then after this independent investigation, the case is turned over to the local district attorney, who decides, either makes the decision himself whether to charge the officers or not charge the officers, or send it to a grand jury. If the district attorney decides not to charge the officer, he has to issue a written report in which he analyzes the law and the facts of the case and why he found that it was a justifiable shooting.
Okay.
If it goes to a grand jury and the grand jury doesn't indict, the grand jury can also issue a report saying why they did not believe, or they believed it was a justifiable shooting. There's another, in addition to the independent agency investigating, of course, the FBI and the Department of Justice also have jurisdiction to investigate any case of this nature to determine if there's any civil rights violations.
Okay.
So that is the process that's being followed here. When the governor called me, basically he said, "Gee, I've heard from some people down there that they think that Dan May is too close to the police and that it would be better if he gave it to some other agency, another local DA's office or something." And I said, "Well, Governor, you do understand that you have the statutory power if there's a legal or ethical reason why the district attorney can't do this case. You've got the power to appoint another DA." And he said, "Yeah, but the DA doesn't have an ethical or legal conflict." So he's acknowledging that Mr. May has no conflict.
Ethical or legal. Okay.
And so what he's proposing is some amorphous standard that if some segment of the community thinks the DA is too close to the police, then the DA ought to disqualify himself. So I was very blunt with him. I said, "Okay, so are you willing to say that the district attorney in Denver, Boulder, and Pueblo," and of course he knew exactly where I was driving at, Democratic DAs, "they have to should recuse themselves in an officer-involved shooting if some segment of the community says, oh, they're too close to the police?" He said, oh, not necessarily. So I said, "Governor, I have to conclude then that your intervention in this is wholly political." Mm-hmm. And then after he did issue that statement, it was interesting, the Gazette did not cover this. The state district attorneys, which are about half Republican and half district attorneys, Democrats, sent out a very blistering letter to the governor saying, "Hey, look, we went through this whole statutory process. We set up this process for independent investigation. That's what's taking place here. Mr. May is one of the most experienced prosecutors in the state, and he's perfectly capable of reviewing this case." As I say, it was interesting to me that the Gazette did not cover that. We know that they had a copy of it. So in any event, I'll always, Renee, be about the rule of law.
Right,
And that should always prevail over the rule of whim. And what we had here is the governor as a whim saying, "Gee, maybe because some people think that this DA is too close to the police." And of course, I told the governor that the FBI has jurisdiction also and all that sort of thing. But it was interesting to me, he wasn't willing to say, "Oh, well, the Denver DA or the Boulder DA needs to do the same thing."
Hmm. And we were kind of talking about this, Mayor. I think a lot of people don't know, and we talked with Sheriff Elder, of course, as we know, El Paso County Sheriff's Office conducted the investigation. But they don't actually rule on their findings, do they?
Absolutely not.
They just send what they collect. And I think a lot of people don't understand that.
That's
Is
exactly
that right?
Right. Yeah. They just do the interviews. They collect the tapes, they collect the ballistic evidence, the coroner's examination, then they turn it over to the DA's office. They don't give any opinion about it. And the DA decides whether to take it to a grand jury, make the decision themselves. And in this case, Renee, quite frankly, pretty much the whole story is on the communication tapes, the dispatch tapes, and the body camera tapes.
And I know you were strongly urging Springs Police, obviously.
Get it out as soon as possible. We got it out as soon as the sheriff said getting it out will not compromise our investigation.
Okay. And it kind of coincided with the when they handed their evidence over to the DA's office.
That's right.
Now, it can take weeks, can it? I mean, that's a lot of information. And so I just want everybody to clearly understand this process, because clearly there's been some confusion on different things. And so it could be weeks that the DA's office reviews all this information
and evidence before they make a decision. One of the threshold decisions, the DA will decide whether or not to take it to a grand jury. And it would probably be the grand jury only meets once a week. And so it could take several weeks to present a case to the grand jury.
And we don't know yet what direction Dan May is going to go.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Okay, Mayor. So thank you for answering all those questions. You know what? Let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we need to talk traffic safety. There are new red light cameras that are going in. We need to talk about 2C stuff. So much to talk about. We've got more with Colorado Springs Mayor John Southers next on The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Today we're talking with Colorado Springs Mayor John Southers. Let's talk traffic safety, Mayor. More, it sounds like red light cameras are going up, and it's kind of in the initial stages. Where are the two new, is it two new intersections?
Yes, Renee. Let's start with the fact that for 2 years in a row, we've had record traffic fatalities in Colorado Springs. And frankly, a lot of it is running red lights. And I know there are people who are philosophically opposed to cameras, red light cameras. They have some big brother notion about it or something like that. The fact of the matter is there's cameras on every intersection anyway.
Right. On business storefronts.
Exactly. And red light cameras is a very effective way to deter red light running. So we have intersections that went live in April, East Platte Avenue and Shelton Road, Briargate Boulevard and Lexington Boulevard. Then we went one that went live, Academy Boulevard, North Carefree Circle on September 1st. That's in what we call a 30-day warning period. So for those next 30 days, you'll just get a warning if you run that red light.
Okay.
And then you'll get a ticket after that. And then a red light will go, a camera will go live at Academy Boulevard in Dublin later this year. Here's the bottom line, Renee. First of all, the technology is pretty amazing. If you get a ticket, when you get notice of it, you'll be able to go online and watch you running the red light.
If you want to try and art, like if you're like, that wasn't me.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You'll see the picture.
Right.
And you'll see a snippet. I think it's up to 12 seconds that will show you entering on a red light.
Right.
So this isn't people entering on a yellow or anything like that. They're entering on a red light. And the amazing thing is, Renee, on these intersections, we're averaging about 50 violations a day.
A day.
Per intersection.
Wow.
That
50 per day per intersection.
Yes.
Okay.
And that shows you what a big problem this is. People are just too impatient. They're probably exceeding the speed limit when they're approaching these red lights. And it's... the other thing that I got to comment on is motorcycle safety. Of this year's fatalities, I think 10 of 33.
I think it was 10, Lieutenant said,
10 of 33 are motorcycles. And frankly, motorcyclists going way too fast, trying to weave through traffic, things
Run
like
red
that.
Lights.
Running red lights. Yeah. That's exactly right. So, you know, I'll listen to the criticism, but... the vast majority of citizens, I think, are very much on board. We need to do something to get better traffic behavior from our citizens.
And it's not just two more. This is kind of a strategy, right? That is, how many
We hope to have about 10.
Eventually,
we'll have 10. And they'll be portable, so you can move them to intersections that are proving particularly problematic.
Okay. And the interesting thing, I think we talked about this before, or maybe I was talking with... Chief Niski or Lieutenant Sokolik, but I mean, even caught, like somebody was like, well, you got a ticket for you're running a red light. Wait, my car was stolen.
Yeah.
Right?
Led to the solving of a stolen car because the car thief picture was
right there.
And when somebody saw it, that's my Uncle Harry, and that's Uncle Harry was the car thief.
Oh, no.
So, yep.
Oh, no. So, again, the new ones. Okay, so Academy North Care Free just went in, right? And that's in the preliminary 30-day trial
right
now. And so that means if you are caught in the 30-day grace period,
you just get a warning.
You just get a warning. After that, the tickets are
$75.
Okay. And then the Academy and Dublin cameras are coming already in, or that's coming soon?
Later this year.
Okay. So, and then that will go through the 30-day grace period and then still rolling
Correct.
Them out. Okay.
Right.
So everybody, you know.
You're on notice.
You are on notice. Well, and we've all seen it. Mike and I were just talking about it this morning. He just watched somebody. It was like 5-10 seconds after the light was red, and he just kept going.
Yep.
Like, that's not acceptable.
Yeah, and it's way, way too common.
Yeah, which is crazy. Okay, so let's talk November ballot. So it was, and I kind of talked with you about this, Mayor, before we came on the air. There was going to potentially be, and then we'll talk what's on the ballot, something on the ballot about voters voting on possible land swap, right? Whether it be voters vote on it or city council majority. And then that looked like it was kind of going one way or the other. And then poof, it went away altogether. What happened with that?
Yeah, that was a protect our parks measure that was supported primarily by opponents of the Strawberry Fields land exchange between the city and the Broadmoor, where the Broadmoor got a use of 8 acres in Strawberry Fields.
Okay.
Had to convert the rest to a conservation easement, and then gave up hundreds and hundreds of acres of land throughout the city. But they wanted any land exchange, essentially, with some limited exceptions, to go to the voters.
Okay.
My problem, of course, that is probably 3 or 4 times a year we have to do something like that to straighten out a survey issue We get 50 acres in exchange for 1/10 of 1 acre and stuff like that. And we need to do those quickly and things
right.
like that. But that's what they wanted to go to the voters. And then an alternate proposal came about. Well, let's just say that any exchange has to be approved by a supermajority of the council, not just
okay.
5, but 6 or 7.
Okay.
And both of them, had some support. But in the bottom line, when it came crunch time and we had to vote on the 3 things that, and I'll explain the other 2 in a second, that might go to the ballot, neither of those 2 could get a 5th vote. And so basically
they died four and four. Okay.
But 2 things did make the ballot.
Okay.
And I'm encouraging our citizens to vote for both. Renee, when I look back on my first 4 and a quarter years as mayor, I think probably the one thing that has kind of epitomized the renaissance of Colorado Springs more than anything else is issue 2C.
Right.
When I became mayor in 2015, our roads were terrible. 60% of them were in poor condition. The citizens were very concerned about it. We had, as a result of doing away with a infrastructure sales tax 20 years ago, we'd lost $1 billion in infrastructure spending, and we were way behind the 8 ball.
Right.
And the voters in November of 2015 passed issue 2C, which was a 0.62 sales tax, so 6.2 cents per $10, that would go strictly to roads and a designated list of roads over the next 5 years. And we're now getting close to the end of the 4th paving season of the 5. By the end of this year, we'll have paved about 850 miles of road. By the end of next year, will be well over 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
90% of that is major arterials and minor arterials. Only 10% of it is residential. While we've made tremendous progress, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who travels around town knows that.
And including residential. We've talked
about
this.
That's exactly right.
And
all of us said at the time, this really is a minimum 10-year deal. But we're going to go 5 years because we want to show the voters what we can do.
Okay.
And so the council and I are asking the voters to re-up for 5 years at a reduced rate, reducing it from 0.62 to 0.57. We're able to do that because with the growth of the economy, 0.57 will still produce about 56, 57 million a year for roads. But our commitment would be that 50% of that money would be spent on residential roads. And the city is issuing a list of all the roads that would be done over the next 5 years, and people can look at it and see if it's in their neighborhood and things like that. But we, in my opinion, we really need to do this to keep up the momentum we've got on public infrastructure.
And then the other one is the Tabor retention. You're going to the voters to ask to retain Tabor money.
That's right. In 2018, the city took in $7 million over the cap, the Tabor cap, because the economy is quite good. We'd like to invest it, just like private individuals or companies would do under Tabor. The voters will have an opportunity to allow the city to keep it or to refund it. It would be about $30 per household. The only mechanism we have for refunds is utility bills.
It goes on your...
Yeah, it won't be per person. It will be $30 per household. What we would do, Renee, the one thing that has not recovered very well from the recession, because, you know, we're now hiring more cops, things like that, but our parks maintenance is still well below pre-recession levels. And we really have tens of millions of dollars of park capital projects that need to be done. And we, the council and I, are asking the voters to allow us to retain $7 million and spend it on a park sesquicentennial package.
Okay, to get ready
for the sesquicentennial.
Yeah. Say that five times fast. Everybody know.
The primary emphasis would be on Palmer Legacy Parks. So it would be Acacia, Alamo, Antlers, Monument Valley would get a huge chunk of money. We'd restore the ponds. We'd put lighting in. You know, there's a huge crowd of pickleball players down there, and they want to play at night. We want the park to be safe at night for all the new people living downtown. And then the other half would be spent all over town, places like Panorama. We would go with artificial turf at Cottonwood Creek. We've had courts that have been unused for decades at Boulder and Thorndale Parks. We would renovate them. And then Coleman Park, way out east by Security Service Field, we would begin to build. So it would be, and then Fort Trail projects.
Okay.
Legacy Loop, Homestake. I'm not sure off the top of my head what the other two were, but long overdue trail projects also.
And of course, and you said these are all approved. And can folks, is that already up on a website? They can go look at these. And when does the ballot have to be finalized by? Is that this month?
Those two have been finalized.
They are finalized. Okay.
The actual number will be finalized by September 9th.
Okay.
The way the sequence right now is, a fountain issue will be 2A, the Tabor retention would be 2B, and renewal of 2C would be, interestingly enough, 2C. But that won't be final until September 9th, because technically someone could withdraw a measure. But we hope that that will be the sequence.
Okay, Mayor, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back on The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Welcome back to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. A few minutes left with Colorado Springs Mayor John Southers. And Mayor, of course, the lawsuit about stormwater continues, and apparently a new judge was assigned recently to the stormwater case. Where are we with that suit?
Okay, just to make sure your listeners know what we're talking about, we've resolved our issues with Pueblo. Who wanted to stop the Southern Delivery System from going online. But we still have a pending case by the EPA and the state of Colorado over violation of what's called an MS4 permit.
Okay.
Basically, their allegation is we weren't cleaning up the water enough before we put it into Fountain Creek, not enough detention and retention. And this all stems from the fact that in 2009, the voters did away with a stormwater fee, and we had drastically reduced stormwater spending from 2009 to 2015. You know, we've had a trial on some of the issues, and Judge Mache, the prior federal judge, found for the plaintiffs, saying, yes, Colorado Springs, you're in violation of your MS4 permit. So we are in settlement negotiations, and it's been my longtime desire to settle this case.
Of course.
Colorado Springs, you know, we weren't spending enough. The bottom line is we weren't spending enough on stormwater. Since I became mayor in 2015, we've totally restructured the stormwater department. We were able to get the voters to cooperate and reimpose a stormwater fee. I'm telling you, the good news is in the next 5 years, we'll have the best stormwater program in Colorado, but we do need to resolve the suit. And I hope to get it resolved in the next 6 months.
Okay. And so, like you said, still with the EPA in state.
Yeah, that's right.
Everything with Pueblo is resolved.
Judge Mache passed away, and it was assigned to another senior judge, Judge Kane. And he has given us till mid-November, I believe, to present, to see if we can get it settled and present a settlement agreement to him. Otherwise, we'll go back to trial.
Okay. Okay. And let's talk about, this was a front page story in the Gazette last week. It has a lot of people talking. Gold Hill Mesa, they have that huge expansion plan going on. You know, businesses and kind of apartments, condos kind of things. There's going to be like shops and stuff. And it, according to the Gazette, it was shut down. Everything shut down, halted, because the city planner said, wait a minute, wait a minute. And is there some confusion surrounding
that? Yeah,
there's
a little bit of confusion. Okay. Shut down is not the right word. First of all, for someone like myself who's lived in Colorado Springs all my life, you know, it was gold mill tailings. Mm-hmm. That smokestack is, right. There was a gold mill there, and the whole hill was tailings. And until about 2000, the conventional wisdom was that it would not be developed. But with some new technology, V-cup, I'm not sure exactly how you'd describe it, but the fact of the matter is you could seal things underneath and put new layers of ground on and things like that. EPA and the Colorado Health Department let development go ahead. And obviously, there's like 500 units there, and a lot of people enjoy living there. They had a couple of high-profile cases where people had some movement in their home. And one of the things you have to always be concerned about, whether it's a developer problem or whether it's a builder problem. In other words, are they moving rainwater far away from the foundation and things like that? Because if you don't do that, in lots of areas in Colorado Springs, you're going to have settling and movement. The what has resulted in the filing that we're in right now, which I think is filing 11, by an ordinance that was passed a couple of years ago, all filings west of I-25 have to go to the geological survey.
And they have to come out and?
And basically say, yeah, you can go ahead. And in this case, they said, we want to see some additional testing. And that's the phase we're in right now. Additional testing, there's back and forth between their soil engineers and things like that. If they meet those additional testing requirements, presumably filing 11 will continue. Okay. So it's not a halt. It's just meeting the city planning requirements, which include complying with any geological survey.
So it's all part of the process, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know what I hope doesn't happen. There's a lot of people who live there, enjoy living there, and I hope that their property values aren't damaged by too much speculation and things like that. Hopefully, everything will be ironed out fairly quickly.
Okay. And really quick, Mayor, before we run out of time, the big State of the City lunch, is that next week?
September 12th, Thursday. Okay. I will give my fifth State of the City address. It's sponsored by the Chamber. It's at the Broadmoor Hall. I think if any tickets are still available, they can be procured through the Chamber of Commerce. I enjoy the opportunity, and I put a lot of work into it. I actually write the speech myself, you know, it's about a half-hour presentation about the progress we've made in the last year, the challenges the cities are facing. We have usually a few highlights. Last year, we honored Jim Duzel, the police officer, got hit in the head or shot in the head, and I think people really enjoy it. Had a huge crowd last year, I think close to 800 or something like that. And all indications are that it's going to be similar this year.
So reach out to the Chamber, it sounds like, to see if there are tickets still available.
That's correct.
Okay. And again, that's next Thursday, September 12th, right?
You bet.
Perfect. Mayor, thank you so much for coming in. Always great seeing you.
Renee, I'll look forward to next month.
Sounds perfect. And tomorrow it is the BBB of Southern Colorado. That's tomorrow on the Extra on KRDO News Radio.